Hi, this is Jim Quick, and I have a quick update for you. I'm proud to announce my very first book, Limitless. Upgrade your brain, learn anything faster, and unlock your exceptional life. This book is not only based on the latest neuroscience, it is field tested for over 28 years of working with some of the most amazing minds on our planet. Just go to limitlessbook.com and enjoy this book.
Welcome to Quick Brain, bite-sized brain hacks for busy people who want to learn faster and achieve more. I'm your coach, Jim Quick.
Free your mind.
Let's imagine if we could access 100% of our brain's capacity.
I wasn't high, wasn't wired, just clear. I knew what I needed to do and how to do it.
I know Kung Fu.
Show me.
Welcome back, Quick Brains. I'm so excited about this episode. The question we have for you today, how does food affect your mental health? When people are thinking about their mood or potentially depression, we always talk about what you eat matters, especially for your gray matter. And to have this conversation with you, we're very excited to have a very special guest, Dr. Uma Naidu, MD. She's a Harvard-trained board-certified psychiatrist. She's a renowned chef. She's a nutrition specialist. She's really a triple threat of sorts. And she's director of nutritional psychiatry at Mass General Hospital and author of this brand new book, which I really did enjoy reading. It's called This Is Your Brain on Food, an indispensable guide to the surprising foods that fight depression, anxiety, PTSD, OCD, ADHD, and more. Welcome to our show.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jim. And thank you for that great welcome. I really appreciate it.
This is such an important topic now, I feel more than ever. Yeah. People hear all the time about their taking care of their physical fitness, and people know that eating food, they do it because it's good for your heart or it's good to lose weight. Mm-hmm. But rarely are we having this conversation about the food and the brain. So when I introduced you and we were talking about nutritional psychiatry, why don't we start there? How do you define that?
Absolutely. And that's a great question, Jim. You know, I think that most, like you said, most people might go in to see their doctor or their nutritionist or clinician and talk about food in relation to cholesterol or high blood pressure, or even trying to lose a few pounds. But no one is making that connection or speaking to doctors or clinicians about food and the brain and the impact on mental well-being. And that's when nutritional psychiatry comes in. For me, preparing meals and learning my journey into cooking was actually a very mindful, creative space. And I didn't know that until I tried it and would be, you know, calling home or emailing home to my mom for recipes. And as I realized that it was meaningful to me, I also understood in learning psychopharmacology and the devastating effects of some medications that there needed to be more that I offered a patient other than my prescription pad, which is a very powerful tool. But at the same time, when you are making or helping to make that clinical decision, I think there needs to be more than just take this pill and take it three times a day. And for me, that connection came from my background. And I began to explore what I could speak to patients about and clients about that they could be doing, whether it was movement, how they were eating, what they were eating to make a difference. And it started there. It started with that interest, and it grew from, you know, studying more, because, you know, there's a big gap in nutrition education in medical schools, and it's not something that comes naturally to many doctors. So you know, you really have to go figure out a lot of that stuff if you love it and if you're interested.
Yeah. Well, you are uniquely qualified to dispense food as medicine, literally. Before we go into the should and the should not eats for food, mm-hmm. Can we talk a little bit about how diet impacts our mood? And you and I talked off camera about this connection between gut health and mental well-being, emotional right. well-being as well.
Absolutely. So one of the mechanisms that I talk about in my book, which is actually the theme and background for How I describe the different foods throughout the book is the gut-brain axis, which, you know, people have heard about. They've heard about the microbiome. But in mental health, there's really a burgeoning amount of research that is connecting gut bacteria, their impact on foods, how different substances get produced. And where it starts is that the gut and brain, although they're far apart from the body, start from the very same cells in the embryo. And they divide and grow, and our gut forms and our brain forms. But then the gut and the brain are also physiologically, anatomically, and biochemically connected by the vagus nerve, which is our 10th cranial nerve. And I like to call the vagus nerve a two-way superhighway, because it's bidirectional flow of information back and forth. And it helps people to understand that although digestion begins earlier than that, when the food is in our gut, whatever is happening there is directly going to be interacting with the gut lining, and the connection to the brain through the vagus nerve. But a few other helpful facts about this gut brain axis are that serotonin is called the happiness hormone, and it is the reason that doctors will prescribe an SSRI like Prozac or Zoloft, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. But more than 90% of the serotonin receptors are found in the gut. Another way that then people start to understand, well, if the gut receptors are there, then there's an impact from my food. And I feel that for now, for the here and now, it's very important for people to also know that a very large component of our immune system is in our gut. So how we eat in terms of healthfulness, immune-boosting foods, anti-inflammatory foods, all of those good things really help our guts thrive, but the microbes in the gut then help boost our immunity or keep us in a mentally fit state, but also physically important because of the current pandemic. And I think that that just helps people to understand that there is this connection between what we eat and then how we feel emotionally.
So I bet a lot of our listeners are really curious to know what are the specific foods that potentially could contribute to these challenges in our mood or depression, the sure. things we should move towards, and maybe the some that we should avoid.
Sure. Absolutely. So, you know, I think that some of the things that have had a very positive impact for mood, I'm going to start with spices, because people don't think of that first, and I'm not necessarily going in order of effect. I'm really trying to offer slightly different information. Two spices, saffron and turmeric, actually hit the high notes with clinical trials of depression. And saffron is not something in a culinary way that we use much of the spice, but it actually has a very powerful effect. So it is the one rare occasion where I might think with someone, if they really want to use nutritional psychiatry measures along with foods, that they may consider a supplement. Turmeric, on the other hand, you only need a small amount of turmeric, even a quarter teaspoon, but always with a pinch of black pepper in your meals. And if you don't cook, as I didn't for many years, you can always add it to a soup, a smoothie, or a tea to have the benefit of turmeric, which also has very powerful other effects, but also an antidepressant effect. So good to add to your food. Then there are the omega-3 fatty acids. And I would prefer that people try these through foods first. And it's easily obtained in a really well-sourced sockeye salmon and other fatty fish like mackerel, tuna, herring, and sardines. And if you're plant-based, you know, you can get shorter chain ALA from things like flax seeds, chia seeds, basil seeds, algae, and certain nuts. And a neat trick that I think people may appreciate is that our bodies are not very efficient in converting short chain, the ALAs, to DHA and EPA. So one thing that I learned along the way is that becomes more efficient in our body when curcumin is present, and curcumin is the active ingredient in turmeric. So my hack there is, if you're having a chia pudding, add in a little bit of turmeric and pinch of black pepper, because it will help the conversion if you happen to, you know, not want to eat seafood or are more plant-based. So, you know, those are a few ways to get started. And then there's including things like the healthy fats from olive oil or avocado that really bring back anti-inflammatory and rich antioxidant substances to your brain, which help. Those are some of the few foods to get started.
Oh, and we'll list those in the show notes, as well as having links to your book. Okay. Well, what about things that could contribute to these ailments, these challenges? Maybe do people do not realize that they're eating, right, that they should maybe avoid or reduce?
Absolutely. So it turns out that nitrates, which are often added in preserved meats and processed meats, are actually a driver of depression and worsened depression. So that's one to watch out for. Things like trans fats, you know, in things like margarine and shortening and hydrogenated oils, actually have been shown to be linked with higher levels of aggression. So staying away from things like trans fats is probably a really good idea, because sometimes when people are not experiencing a good mood or feeling a little bit low, they can also be a little bit irritable or feel a little bit on edge and angry. So it's an important one to think about and know. Artificial sweeteners, unfortunately, worsen mood. The ones that were worse there were aspartame, saccharin, and sucralose. So, you know, just be aware of that. And then, you know, the refined sugar and things like baked goods and candy, and, you know, the sugar and high fructose corn syrup, people know that these are not good for our physical health, but they actually have been shown to be linked to studies regarding mood. So something to keep in mind as well.
The artificial sweeteners, where do they usually hide?
So artificial sweeteners can hide in diet soda. They can hide in things that are called sugar-free, because they are not technically, you know, refined sugar or the way that we think about it. So it might be just making sure that you understand a food label and that it's not hidden there to sweeten something. I remember someone who told me recently that they bought a healthy ketchup. And ketchup is a food where tons of added sugar are contained in many types of ketchup, not every single type. But she bought this very innocently, thinking this is a really good option. But when she read the book, she realized that sucralose is an artificial sweetener, and they were using that to bring that slightly sweet taste to the ketchup that she bought. So that's a good, you know, checking the food labels becomes a very important part. For example, there's an organization that has found at least up to 250 other names for sugar on food labels. So really knowing that people mean sugar on a food label becomes important, because you may think, oh, there's no sugar in this. And it's not that it'll be labeled sugar-free. It is that you don't realize that that's another name for sugar. And I think that us as consumers really knowing a little bit more about food labels would be a good thing when it comes to things like added sugars, other names for sugar, but also that something may be sweetened using an artificial sweetener.
Mm. And I know we're going to do another episode specifically talking about concentration and ADHD, maintaining our focus in a world, you know, which is full of distractions as it is. Oh. But the food sometimes that we ingest don't make it any easier.
Make it worse.
I make a golden milk sometimes with like an almond milk.
Yes.
Brick, and I add the pepper in there also as well. So. And it just maybe a little bit of ghee. And I feel fantastic.
It's one of my favorites. it's very warming and soothing, and it actually has some good benefits to your brain. So
it's wonderful. And you have recipes in here, and it's also the footnotes was really impressive. Having written, you know, earlier this year.
Yes, congratulations.
Must be like 500 plus.
Exactly. So the way that it happened, Jim, is I looked at probably upwards of 700 references to sort of sort through and weed out what what was most relevant to the book. And then we made an editorial decision to include the endnotes in the book so that someone, you know, like yourself, was reading through a chapter. And we tried to make, I tried to make the information digestible, pardon the pun, but, you know, so that the people understand, you know, a super science audience, wants to know more and can actually look up that reference, go find the article, but they know that it comes from a certain journal or certain online reference. And I thought that was important because, you know, this is no longer a soft science. There's a good amount of evidence developing. Does that mean that absolutely everything is 100% all of the time? In nutritional science, that's never the case. But at least we providing the studies that you can look at and decide for yourself.
That's amazing. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Everybody go and get their copy of This Is Your Brain on Food and take a screenshot of this episode and tag Dr. Uma, tag myself on social media.
Thank you.
And when you do that, share, I want to ask everybody a question so they can post it.
Oh, good.
What should they post? Something that they, a new, one of the foods?
I would love to hear from them if they tried a new spice, because there's a significant number of spices listed in the book that have an impact on brain fog, on mood, on anxiety. So I would love to hear that. So. And they can find me at DRUMANAIDOO because they wouldn't know that.
Fantastic. So tag us both in the post so we see it. I'll repost some of my favorites. And I actually bought an extra couple copies of your book. So I'll actually give
you
one person just at random.
Thank you so much.
I know. And also look for a future episode where we're going to continue this conversation and talk about food and focus. Because I know right now that's a big issue for a lot of people. So Dr. Naidu, thank you so much for being on our show. And people can find out the book where?
They can find it at my website, umanaidumd.com, UMANAIDOOMD.com. We have the links to all the online stores. I also like to ask people to support their smaller local bookstores if they can. You can, find it on Amazon and other major retailers. Thank you.
And remember, what you eat matters, especially for your very matter. Thank you for listening, everybody.
Want to double your brain speed and memory power? If you'd like to learn rapidly and get ahead faster, I'd like to give you my brand new Quick Brain Accelerator program. You will discover exactly what I teach my clients to learn, read, and remember anything in half the time. There is no charge. It's my gift to you for being one of our subscribers. That's kwikbrain.com. Growing up struggling with learning challenges from a childhood brain injury, it's been my life's mission to help you have your very best brain so you can win more every single day. Now, want more quick brain? Here are four ways to fast track your results and lock in what you just learned into your long-term memory. Remember FAST, F-A-S-T. The F stands for Facebook. You're not alone on this journey. I invite you to join our free private online group. There you can connect with me, your fellow brain lovers, links to resources, and even submit your questions for me to answer in future episodes. Go to quickbrain.com. That's K-W-I-K-brain.com. The A stands for apply. Act on what you learned today. Remember, knowledge is not power, it's potential power. It only becomes power when you use it. So use what you just learned. The S stands for subscribe. Don't miss the next episode and other free brain training. And finally, the T stands for teach. You want to learn faster now? The key is to lock it in right away by teaching it to someone else. When you teach something, you get to learn it twice. Here's a simple way to do that. Leave a review on iTunes. Leave a review with your biggest takeaway from this episode. You could also post and share this podcast on your social media. It helps us spread our mission of building better, brighter brains. And of course, tag us so our team can properly thank you. Hashtag QuickBrain, K-W-I-K brain. Mine is at Jim Quick, K-W-I-K, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. So, what does FAST stand for? Facebook, apply, subscribe, teach. I'll see you in our next episode of Quick Brain. Until then, remember, you are faster and smarter than you think.